fidelity to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let's pray for.
Yes. May we have the changes to the agenda, please?
First item, added item to the consent is B4, a request by County Fire to 1. Accept a grant for safety equipment and training in the amount of $594,066. 2. Approve a budget adjustment in the amount of $522,816. And then $415,847 in unanticipated revenue, $106,969 for the County Fire Department Equipment Replacement Reserve, and $14,250 from significant value account. And 3, amend the fixed asset list, adding 19 commercial clothing washers and 14 building emissions system. Recommend approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting the cover sheet be amended by correcting the budget adjustment amount to $537,066. Added item on consent is B9, request by Supervisor Lenthal to appoint Penny Rappa to District 3 representative to the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Recommend approval. B10, the following parcel map has been received and has satisfied all the conditions of approval that were established in the public hearing on its tentative map. A, and then it's CO. 04-0215, a proposed subdivision resulting in 8 lots and 1 remainder lot by SPRR and Butterfield McCroy LLC, Mission Street and San Miguel. Reject the offer of dedication without prejudice and or to future acceptance, District 1. Recommend approval. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. Added items on closed session is number 7, in regard to Public Utilities Commission application of the San Luis Obispo County versus UPRR. Your board is being asked to consider adding this item to today's agenda. The need to add this item arose subsequent to the 72-hour noticing requirement of the Brown Act. The need for placement of the item on your board's agenda is contained in the item itself. Your board is to take action on a motion for the need to place this item on today's agenda and a motion to add the item, both of which can be combined into one motion. A unanimous vote from board members present is required to add the item to the agenda. Hearing amended items. C3, hearing to consider an appeal of Thomas and Gail Farrell of the Subdivision Review Board's denial of a reconsideration of the conditions of approval of parcel map CO90054S020383P to authorize a reduction of the agricultural buffer from 400 feet to 100 feet for the property located at 1450 Eureka Lane in the community of Templeton, 1st District. The title on the cover sheet needs to be amended to reflect an agricultural buffer from 300 feet to 100 feet, not 400 feet. And those are all the changes on today's agenda.
Thank you very much. With that,
Approval of the presentations.
Chair, I think we need to take a vote on that added item.
I just moved.
Okay, move approval. Somebody.
I did.
Okay, second.
The added item?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought you were doing a consider. I'll second.
Do we need a roll call on that?
No.
Vote, everyone in favor?
Aye.
Yes. Opposed? Okay. With that, we will move on to the presentation calendar. There was a motion to approve.
Move approval.
Second.
And we need a roll call on that.
Mr. Azazian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Ms. Bianchi?
Yes. Okay. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce is celebrating its 100th anniversary, and I would like Mr. Garth and anyone else from the chamber that would like to come to the podium to please do that at this time. The board has a resolution that states the following: resolution recognizing San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce for its centennial celebration. Whereas the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce was founded in 1905, and 2 years later, in 1907, it published its first brochure promoting San Luis Obispo County. And whereas the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce formed the San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau in 1922 and was instrumental in the formation of the first local Rotary Club in 1923, and whereas the Chamber of Commerce collaborated with the City of San Luis Obispo in 1958 to form the Convention and Tourist Bureau, and in 1964 it created the Downtown Committee, which later became the Downtown Association. And whereas Dave Garth was hired as the Chamber's Executive Director in 1973, the same year the Chamber of Commerce debuted its monthly newspaper and organized into four divisions: Legislative, Economic Development, Community Affairs, and Membership Affairs. And whereas the Chamber of Commerce drafted its first vision statement in 1981, was accredited by the United States Chamber of Commerce in 1982, and founded the Visitors and Conference Bureau in 1986. And whereas the Chamber of Commerce hosted the first Good Morning SLO in 1989, and the first class of its leadership SLO program graduated in 1992, the same year the Chamber published its first economic visions document. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the County of San Luis Obispo Board of Supervisors, State of California, does hereby recognize the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce for its centennial celebration.
Have her take a nice picture.
Somebody always has a camera.
She doesn't have to write.
No scissors.
Thank you.
You'd like to make the comment?
Yes.
When wouldn't he like to make a comment?
I guess I am a part of the history, but it's a little scary. First of all, I think thank you so much for this recognition. We really, really appreciate it. Like the county, we are a compilation of almost volunteers and paid staff, and we've been that combination for years. And I would like to have many of our board members are here this morning, if they would stand and be recognized. This is about a third of our board. And Bob Wacker, the chairman of our board, I would like to have say a couple of words, but I would just like to thank you. It has been a great relationship we've had with government over the years, and we appreciate all of the hard work that you folks do in working with us. And I'd just like Bob to say a few words.
No funny money, Bob?
No. I didn't bring any funny money with me today, Cacho. I came unprepared. I apologize. But I'll just add my thanks very much for the recognition. The Chamber takes a great interest in areas all around the county, which you represent, and I think you recognize that. And we're very proud of the relationship that we have with the Board of Supervisors in the county, and plan to look forward to continuing that for another 100 years. And Dave will, I'm sure, be in charge. Thanks very much.
Dave, why don't you get your board to come up and get a picture?
And just one thing, I am not 100 years old.
Yet.
Dave, why don't you come up and get your board picture?
Sure. We're used to this, Dave.
We're not. Bill, I see you advertising.
Yeah,
look like you guys like you got it. Yes, Dad.
You have to scrunch.
Great,
thank you.
Thank you
so
much. You all. Thank you.
Good.
That concludes the presentation calendar. Now is the time for public comment for items that are not on the agenda for today. So when I'll call one name, and then the second name can go to the alternate microphone, and we'll proceed with that. The first person to speak is Teresa Campbell, followed by Eric Michelson.
Hello, my name is Teresa Campbell, and I am from Cambria. I'm here with some people who grow commercially corn for their and for their own private use also. They grow heirloom varieties, and they share concerns of contamination by genetically engineered crops. Contamination by GE to conventional or organic crops can and has happened in many ways, some of which could never have been predicted. For instance, last December, one of the world's largest seed companies called Seminis, which incidentally has been bought out by Monsanto since this happened, but they were from Oxnard, was fined for sending genetically engineered tomato seeds to UC Davis without properly identifying them. UC Davis, unaware that the seeds were genetically engineered, sent them to researchers all over the world who had requested conventional seeds. The problem was an administrative error. Nevertheless, it went on for 7 years. UC Davis is supposed to be tops in America for GE expertise and research, so you can add that to the list of opportunities for accidental contamination and ask yourself whether GE or conventional crops can coexist in this county. Back to corn, the Starlink fiasco is still with us. Starlink is a corn that was introduced in 98 in America for animal feed and to manufacture ethanol. By 2000, it was mixed in with all our food. U.S. factories had to shut down. Supermarkets pulled corn chips, taco shells, and grits off the shelves for more than 300 kinds of corn products that were found to be tainted with Starlink. The problem didn't end there. The Japanese cut U.S. corn imports by 50% when they detected samples of it in USDA, what the USDA said was free of Starlink. The Koreans banned American corn altogether after detecting Starlink in a shipment of tortillas that the USDA said was clean. After that, even starving countries like India and Zambia started getting picky. So a few weeks ago, Starlink is still with us. It was detected in bags of World Food Program corn, and now activists in six Latin American countries are denouncing the U.S. for trying to pawn off our unsafe food on the Guatemalan poor. And I guess Aventis, that cost them hundreds of millions of dollars, they claimed that the growers didn't isolate it, which they were supposed to do in buffer zones, so pollen drift occurred. Also, grain processors inadvertently mixed the Starlink corn with regular corn. So, you know, contamination does occur. As this debate continues in our county, you will probably hear numerous explanations about the effectiveness of buffer zones, but real-life facts do contradict these attempts to comfort us and prove that coexistence is really kind of a myth. At the very least, farmers have a right to know where GE crops are being grown so they can take steps to protect themselves from contamination. So I ask the board to direct the Agricultural Commissioner to consider, as part of its task force, notification requirements from farmers planting GE crops, whether it be food, pharmaceutical, or industrial crops. And for consumers out there who might be interested in wanting to not be eating genetically engineered crops and food and are a little bit confused as to how to avoid it, I would say buy organic. It's growing by 20%.
Thank you, Teresa.
America. Thank you.
Eric Michelson, followed by Jesse Arnold.
Good morning, supervisors. My name is Eric Michelson. I'm a certified organic farmer in Los Osos. I'm here just to talk real quickly about the need to regulate genetically engineered crops here in the county. It's a fact they can be grown, but we need to properly regulate and control the growth. Whether or not we agree with genetic engineering of the food we eat, genetically engineered seed can be purchased and grown in San Luis Obispo County today. It is extremely important at this early stage of the game that genetically engineered crops be regulated and controlled. Like pesticides, genetically engineered crops need to be registered and proper growing techniques must be followed. But why? Why is this so important? Well, first of all, the fastest growing and most popular segment in agriculture today is organics. Organic agriculture is seeing an annual industry growth rate of 20%. Is it any wonder why the giants of corporate America are buying up smaller organic businesses? The list is long and impressive. Odwalla, a maker of organic juices, is now owned by Minute Maid, which is a subsidiary of Coca-Cola. Boca Burger, the organic burger maker, is now owned by Kraft, a subsidiary of Philip Morris. Organic Cow in New England and Horizon Organic Dairies, with over $200 million in sales, is now owned by Dean Foods Corporation. And Dean Foods is owned by a bunch of companies called Microsoft, General Electric, Exxon, Walmart, PepsiCo, Citicorp, Pfizer, Philip Morris, and Home Depot. I just bring this up because organics is becoming part of the mainstream agriculture here in the United States. A recent acquisition was Cascadian Farms in Washington, which was bought up by Small Planet Foods. Sounds like an organic company, and it's now owned by General Mills. Corporate America knows the trend when they see it. Organic farming is now a big business in many sectors of the country. And in fact, General Mills is now a major donor of the Organic Trade Association, one of the largest opponents to genetic engineered crops. The largest producer of GE seed, Monsanto, has now published growing standards for its yield guard rootworm corn that requires buffer zones to be planted or built into the planted acreage of BT corn. In fact, the EPA requires that Monsanto ensure that 20% of the planted acreage of its BT corn be set aside where non-BT corn would be grown to reduce the possibility of that GE corn from developing resistance to BT. And that prevents the emergence of superbugs. But corn isn't the only crop we need to be concerned about here in San Luis County. Considerable acreage is planted in broccoli and squash, and those are the new genetic engineered seed that's coming out. I urge the Board of Supervisors to direct the Ag Commissioner to establish monitoring and registration of the planting of GE crops here in San Luis County. This will help safeguard.
Thank you for your comments. Your time is up.
Is that 3 minutes?
That's 3 minutes.
I timed this thing, and it was only 2:40. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, but thank you for your comments. Jesse Arnold, followed by Barbara Spencer.
Thank you, Chairman Bianchi and members of the board. My name is Jesse Arnold, and I grow Indian corn in Cambria. And Teresa will be passing out packets of seeds to you from my Indian corn and also some cornbread that I made from the corn. Because this is an heirloom variety, of course, I save the seed to plant next year's crop. And I'm free to give the seed away or do anything I want with it. If this were a genetically engineered seed, I would be forbidden to save the seed for next year's crop, and I would be forbidden to give it away. So that's an important difference between these crops. And there are no strings attached, but if you don't want to grow it, hopefully you'll find someone who does. And if you don't want to grow it, people have told me that they can grind meal out of this in their coffee grinder. So if you have a coffee grinder and want to make it into cornmeal, you can give that a whirl. One of the reasons for preserving the heirloom varieties is because they have a wide variety of genes. And further down the line, we may need some of these genes for modern-day crops, something that we missed along the way or dropped out along the way. And with Indian corn, I think of disease resistance because from growing it, I know that it's very disease and pest resistant. So it has to have genes for that, and it's worthy of saving just for that reason. I fell into growing it quite by accident. As you know, it's sold every year in the supermarket as decorative corn, but of course the Indians ate it. This is the same kind of corn that the Indians taught the pilgrims at Plymouth Plantation to grow. So it's part of our history. Corn has been grown under cultivation for 6,000 years. This is what sustainability looks like. This corn has stood the test of time, and we should not pollute it with something that's just cooked up in the last 5 or 10 years. So my plea to the board would be to ask the Ag Commissioner to help us to protect our heirloom corn from genetic pollution. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, Jesse. Barbara Spencer, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning. My name is Barbara Spencer, and my husband Bill and I live and farm on Windrose Farm, which is a certified organic farm.
You can pull that microphone down. It's easier on your neck.
Okay. We live and farm Windrose Farm, which is a certified organic farm east of Paso, north of Creston. On our farm, 90 to 95% of all crops we grow are from heirloom and open pollinated seeds from areas in the Southwest, the Mediterranean, and Asia. And we sell these at farmers markets, we sell these to restaurants, and through brokers all across the country now, all the way to Florida. And one of the things that has evolved is we are now also in the process of doing grow-outs for seed banks throughout the country for native seed search in Tucson, Arizona, and also for Anson Mills in South Carolina. We have done grow-outs of corn for 2 years previously, which you see in the little multicolored pack was the 03-04 corns. They can be grown as well as be a paperweight. This year we are growing out for Anson Mills an Italian red corn, a repatriated heirloom corn. And for us to be able to proceed with our business, it is really essential that we have, as Teresa mentioned, notification and information regarding any GE crops being grown in our area. We would obviously prefer none, but it's very important for us to continue our business as a certified organic farm and as what we're now becoming, which is a seed producer of heirloom and open pollinated crops, corns, beans, squashes, and other things, to be able to continue our business. And the notification would be highly beneficial and essential. Thank you. Oh, I would like to read just from Bill. In your hands are kernels of ancient corn grown here in San Luis Obispo County. They are the lineage, the core of Central American culture, and many others, and represent the once vibrant linkage all people had with the foods that sustained them. The impact of genetically altered organisms, while devastating to a crop, has the potential of far greater impact to our communities and cultures. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Eric Greening, and that's a final request to speak form that I have for public comment.
I am Eric Greening, and I'm here in support of the corn growers and other agriculturalists who are trying to preserve the sustainable way of growing. And I can put a couple of other spots on the map where I know that there are farms growing heirloom corn, one of which is north of Lake Nacimiento, and another is a community-supported agriculture operation west of Paso Robles. There probably isn't corn growing right now because it's not the season, but every year in season, these corns are planted. While we live in an area where the indigenous Chumash and Salinan cultures did not include corn in their horticulture, you don't have to travel very far, even here within California, to find cultures where corn goes way back. The Chemehuevi, whose territory starts about 150 miles to the east of us, for example, grew varieties of corn that we would now consider heirloom. These are drought-adapted varieties. The Spencers mentioned native seed search and are propagating some of that seed stock in this county. The native seed search works with the arid southwest and northwestern Mexico, both to return broken lineages to the tribes that originated them, and also to allow others in the arid regions who are interested in being frugal with water to be able to have varieties that either will find themselves adaptable locally or through seed saving and selection will become locally adapted. It is a process that needs to happen in its own good time. And when you consider how thirsty and soil depleting the commercial varieties of corn are, and how incredibly frugal, there are corns grown on the Hopi Mesa, for example, where instead of planting in rows, you plant them in hills. The roots intertwine, and sometimes with other crops, and go so deep that you actually begin by putting the seeds 8 to 10 inches into the soil. They're able to sustain themselves not even with artificial or natural irrigation, but with the periodic thunderstorms that happen in that area. I know at least one of you has a very good record as a water conservation person, and all of you are more or less sworn to promote those values in this county. And the best way to promote those values is to ensure the safety of the crops that are part of the solution and protect them from the crops that are part of the problem. I'm speaking of corn in particular, but a lot of other crops where there are drought-adapted varieties, which are heirloom and open-pollinated. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Eric, but don't go away. That concludes public comment. I have no other request to speak forms, so at this time I will open it to the public for comment on the consent agenda, and I have one request to speak form. Eric.
I am Eric Greening on item B3. This is an amended agreement with Rincon Consultants on an EIR for cleanup of the Chevron Estero Marine Terminal. You probably don't have the agreement in front of you as it's a clerk's file item, but I have a few questions. First, is the funding coming from those who created the mess? Even if it were unfairly coming from the taxpayers of this county, I still insist that the job be thorough, whatever the cost, but the insistence is more persuasive if the parties responsible for the mess are shouldering the cost. The major issue necessitating the amended agreement is the recognition that this is an extremely important and sensitive cultural site. This raises the question of whether the specific consultations with Native Americans have been and are occurring in the form now required by SB 18. While this is not a general plan update or amendment, the spirit of this new law would necessitate giving this project similar status in consulting with any tribe that has filed written public notice under this law's provisions. If you are uninformed about this new law and its effect on your processes, I suggest that you schedule a study session to be brought up to speed. Speaking of speed, I hope this won't be too hasty. Your board is expected to approve the cleanup project itself in June, and there is a reference to February 1st as a needed start date on the activities covered by the agreement before you. We're over a month past that date. Given a conflict between deadlines and thoroughness, which will prevail? Additional questions. This agreement specifies a maximum cost of $248,000, yet I also find the following language, quote, "We assume no intact burials, isolated human remains, or other complex cultural features will be discovered. Additional costs may be incurred if human remains or other complex features are discovered," unquote. Given the extreme sensitivity of the area, the assumption of not finding those features does not feel prudent. Will the $248,000 ceiling prevent responsible and respectful handling of these resources? This goes back to my original points. Please be sure to make funding available to do a thorough and proper job, preferably paid for by the polluter, and please do it in respectful consultation with the native people affected. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Eric. I have no other request to speak forms on the consent agenda, so with that, I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Harry, do you have any?
No, ma'am.
Jim?
No, ma'am.
No.
Gotcha.
Move approval of the consent agenda item unless
I have a comment. I'm not sure. Is that you, David?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just a quick follow-up. Eric had asked the question, and the answer is the EIR is paid for by Chevron, the applicant, Chevron Pipeline Company.
And the very fact that they found cultural resources and extended the scope of the EIR to address those issues, I think, is an indication that we truly do care about them and will do the best that we can. With that, I would entertain a motion. Oh, you moved already.
Second.
Okay, maybe we have a roll call, please.
That includes the changes in the ads?
Yes.
Those, don't you?
Mr. Sajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovett?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Ms. Bianchi?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, with that, we will move on to item C1. May we have an introduction of item C1, please?
Item C1 is a hearing to an ordinance amending certain sections of Chapter 2.44 and 2.48 of the County Code concerning the Civil Service Commission or Civil Service Services. Introduced March 1st, 2005. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Seebach.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the board. Jerry Seebach, Auditor Controller. As you may recall, we are in the middle of implementation of new accounting and human resource management systems within the County of San Luis Obispo. In fact, the second phase focuses on human resource and payroll. One of our goals in this process is to move the county closer to what is known as industry best practices, to change the way we are doing things for the better while we're doing this. And a lot of things over the years have kind of grown up through past practice, or it seemed like a good idea at the time, or it was written into our ordinances and we have no choice about it. But we're taking this opportunity to make some changes which will streamline our processes, make them more efficient, and also, we believe, more equitable for the employees. So we proposed some amendments to the civil service codes and went through a process of negotiation with all of the employee labor organizations, and we have reached this point where these ordinance changes are recommended for your consideration. You need to open a public hearing and take input and then consider these changes. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of Mr. Seebach by board members? I see no light, so with that, I will open it to the public. Is there anyone from the public who has any comments? So I see no one, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board for...
Move approval of staff's recommendation.
Second.
Waive the reading.
May we have a roll call, please?
Supervisor Asajian?
Aye.
Supervisor Ovid?
Aye.
Supervisor Lenthal?
Aye.
Supervisor Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Sorry.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
With that, may we have an introduction of item C2, please?
Item C2 is a hearing to consider ordinances amending certain chapters of Title 24, Airport Rules and Regulations, and Title 1, General Provisions of the County Code. Introduced March 1st, 2005. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Thank you. Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the board, Martin Pell, your Assistant Airports Manager. In the last few months, have done a review of Title 24, which are airport rules and regs, and we come to you today to propose certain amendments, some house cleaning to that ordinance, as well as an amendment to Title 1 that incorrectly showed the mobile home ordinance as Title 24. It should have been Title 25. And we have members of staff prepared to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of staff? I see no lights, so obviously there are no questions. I have no request to speak for them. So I'll open it to the public in case anyone would like to get up. I see no one, so I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board. Now the question that I have of someone, we have two ordinances here. Can we do these together? Do we do these separately?
You can do them together.
Okay. May we have a motion, please?
Move approval of staff's recommendation.
Second.
May we have a roll call?
Waive the reading?
Yes. Unless we want to be here all day.
Please, no. Mr. Asajian? Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. Boy, we're moving right along. One of the things that concerns me are Mr. and Mrs. Farrell here? They're not. Are they out in the? We're 30 minutes ahead of time.
Mr. and Mrs. Farrell here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, this is a continuation, maybe we can...
Yeah. I think we'll just go ahead. They know pretty much what we'll be doing anyway, so may we have an introduction of item C3?
Item C3 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Thomas and Gail Farrell of the Subdivision Review Board's denial of a reconsideration of the conditions of approval for parcel map CO90-0054 S020389P to authorize a reduction of an agricultural buffer from 400 feet to 100 feet for the property located at 1450 Eureka Lane in the community of Templeton, 1st District. This item is continued from January 11, 2005. Recommend partially upholding the appeal.
Thank you. May we have a staff report, please?
Karen Nall with the Planning and Building Department. Again, this item was continued from your January 11th meeting. Your board partially approved the request on that date, modifying the buffer to 150 feet with the inclusion of a 15-foot landscape screen. Your board continued the item to allow staff to prepare an environmental determination and to bring back findings and conditions. And that is what I have for you today. Staff is recommending that you adopt the negative declaration and the resolution approving the findings and conditions.
Thank you. With that, are there any questions of staff by board members? Mr. Patterson.
Yes, Ms. Nall, and the conditions, Exhibit B, page 9, C39, it states that a 15-foot vegetative screen needs to be planted along the western property line, and it conditions it in the sense that it has to be an effective buffer in 24 months. How is that determined?
Well, this one, we've only had this one other time, which was the paver project to the north of this. So it's a staff test. We're going to work with the Ag Commissioner's office and hopefully come up with a good solution. The Ag Commissioner's office is working on an acceptable plant list. They didn't have it currently, but they're working on that.
I would, if I might...
Mr. Yes, Hunter, please, Minister. Mr. Ovid.
I imagine by reading this, too, that you're also looking at size of trees, you know, that basically would usually be 5, 10, or 15 year or by bucket or however they do it. So a lot of this is going to be fairly well-established materials.
Okay, I have, there's no other lights, so with that I'll open it to the public. I have one request to speak for him, Eric Greening.
Good morning again. I feel kind of strange coming in before the Farrells, but I guess if they're not here, I am. They're probably hearing this on a car radio and hitting the accelerator. Anyway, I think that what makes me a little uncomfortable about this, or maybe more than a little uncomfortable about this, is we have no data in front of us as to whether vegetation is or is not equivalent to 250 feet of space in reducing the impact, whether we're talking about pesticide drift, whether we're talking about pollen drift, which is an issue you will remember from public comment. Home gardeners are very likely to be using, more and more likely to be using heirloom seed as word gets around of its drought effectiveness and people try to preserve their wells. We don't have information, at least I have not seen information, as to what the effectiveness of what kind of vegetation might be and whether it is an equivalent to the effectiveness of space. You're essentially making a ruling based on the layout of this site, but it will be a ruling that by its nature will tend to set a precedent in terms of future applicants, all of whom are likely to have one or another sort of site constraint.
And so I'm just not real comfortable with this without a real scientific information base on the effectiveness of vegetation, and particularly a very young vegetation, which this one seems to be counting on. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Eric. I have no other request to speak forms. Is there anyone? I see no one, so I will close it to the public and bring it back. I'm not sure which light went on first here, so I'll start with Mr. Ovid.
Well, I'm going to do one thing and then make a motion. First of all, this is dry land ag that surrounds it, and dry land ag has buffers from 100 to 300. And the only reason that the original time period and some of the things that were in the original report was a potential of intensification of agriculture. Mr. Greening, most of this has already had herbicides and everything in it, so I very seriously doubt if it can be done with organic and that kind of issues. And the prevailing wind is coming to the property. So the 15-foot really is a secondary besides the 150 feet. For protection. And I'll make the motion when
Well,
ready.
Just a minute, Mr. Patterson would like to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When this issue originally came before the board, Thank you, Chair. When this issue originally came before the board, I did have some concerns. It was on appeal from the Subdivision Review Board, and the Subdivision Review Board and the Ag Commissioner's Office both recommended that a 200-foot buffer with a 15-foot vegetative screen would be adequate. This site on Eureka Lane has been characterized as a residential area within a sea of agriculture. There are grapes located in that area, and so intensification of the agricultural uses could occur in the future, and grapes would require even a greater buffer because of their use of pesticides. The current owner of the ag land does plan to continue farming there, and when the parcel was created in 1991, it was created with the condition that there be a 300-foot agricultural buffer to protect ag operations, and the current owners were aware of that. And finally, the planning staff also indicated that there are other appropriate sites outside the buffer area on the parcel that could house a secondary unit, and for that reason, I don't support lowering the recommended buffer zone. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm ready to make a motion.
Yes.
I move that staff's recommendation, findings and conditions.
Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
No.
Mrs. Bianchi?
No. I didn't support it in the first place, and I don't support it now. With that, now I'm really concerned because the next item is listed to be heard at 11 o'clock. Is Mr. Bradley Orison here? Ah.
We're the representatives.
Okay. So we can go ahead with item. Okay. Thank you. May we have an introduction of item D1, please?
Item D1 is a request by Bradley Orison for the Land Use Element Amendment Application, LRP 2004-00010, to amend the Salinas River Area Plan by changing the land use category on approximately 3.5 acres from residential suburban to residential single family, located on the southwest corner of Bonita Place and Crispin Avenue in the community of San Miguel, 1st District.
Cammie?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Who's going to be doing the staff report?
Cammie Griffin, County Planning Staff. I'm actually stepping in for the project manager who's out sick today.
This is a request for an authorization for an amendment to the county's general plan. It's the first step in the process. It's really a chance for your board to tell staff whether to continue processing an application or to stop processing that application. If authorized, the amendment continues through the process, including environmental review and public hearings before both Planning Commission and board. This particular request is in the community of San Miguel. It's a request to amend the area plan to change approximately 3.5 acres from residential suburban to a combination of residential single family and open space. The property is partially in the Salinas River, and that's the portion that's requested for the open space zoning, with the remaining portion being designated residential single family. It shows the zoning map. There is single family both to the north and south, and residential multifamily to the west. The authorization issues, if this is authorized for processing, that will be evaluated is whether the request is consistent with the purpose and character statements for the proposed zoning, whether it's an appropriate conversion, and whether it's a logical extension of the single family category. We recommend that you authorize the processing of the proposed amendment, which would allow evaluation of potential lot designs, which did come up as an issue with the community advisory group, and the preparation of potential planning area standards. And that would conclude my comments, unless I can answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions of staff by board members? I see none, so I will open it to the public. I have one request to speak form, Eric Greeney. Oh, the applicant should go first. Yeah, thank you, Eric. You change the color of these yellow forms. They catch my eye. Okay.
My name is Scott Stokes with RRM Design Group. I'm representing the project. This project we're very excited about. We've talked with staff. They've been very helpful with this process. We appreciate that. The layout that we're proposing is actually a suggestion by staff to do a cluster development, thereby allowing a little bit smaller lots that are consistent with the neighborhood and maintaining the open space that's within the river air corridor. So we're really excited. We think it's a good project. It's kind of an infill, and it fits nicely with what's the surrounding community.
Okay, are there any questions of the applicant? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Eric.
I'm Eric Greening, and I do believe this is an appropriate use in an appropriate place, and I do think it's well designed. I do have a couple of questions. One, kind of returning to a theme I already brought up, because of the new law, SB 18, which requires consultation with Native people on general plan amendments, I'm just wondering if that consultation has taken or is taking place. This is an extremely sensitive area culturally. The other question I have is whether the applicants have consulted the inundation maps in the City of San Luis Obispo EIR for raising of Salinas Dam. I would like to think that project is defunct now because it hasn't been taken up, and they're looking at other alternatives, such as participating with the North County and the Nacimiento project. But I have not heard a genuine death knell. And if the higher dam were to fail, I would think, you know, just based on my own reading of those maps, which are on sort of antiquated, they're on antiquated topos, but as I read it, it's possible that some of the places where they would want to put houses might be in that inundation area. I don't think that should necessarily discourage anyone. It should simply encourage us to get the City of San Luis Obispo to make a hard and fast decision that they are not moving forward with raising Salinas Dam, which is a dam that would be very questionable at a safety standpoint at that height. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments, Eric. I have no other request to speak form, so I will close it to the public. I have one question and one comment before Mr. Ovett makes a motion.
Go ahead.
I was laughing with Vicki. The question is from Warren Hogue, or Cammie, either one. What about the SB 18 requirements for consultation?
That will occur, if your board authorizes this reprocessing, it will occur as part of the environmental determination.
It gives me great pleasure to support this project because it truly is infill, and it seems to me to be a very appropriate and good location, and I'm certainly glad you're not trying to extend it into the river. Mr. Patterson and then Mr. Robin.
Yes, I just wanted to make a quick comment, too, that I appreciate the fact that you're designing with the consistency.
Your microphone.
Yeah. I just wanted to comment that I appreciate the fact that you're designing with the consistency of the neighborhood and that you are increasing the density there to 14 lots. I think we need to have smaller lots here in a variety to build a greater variety of housing affordability, and I think this is a good project, and I appreciate your effort.
Now, Mr. Robin. Isn't it a shock to have us all?
I just kind of went back
you?
About 10, 11 years ago when Yatsko did the whole subdivision and wondered if I'd have got the same response then.
Moresco?
No, it was not Moresco then. It was done by Yatsko, and it was no, it's not Midland. That's the original subdivision it was done by.
Well, make your motion.
Move to staff's recommendation.
Second.
All in favor? Yes.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, go for it. With that, we've completed our morning agenda. We will be going into closed session. Are there any public comments on closed session? No public comment on closed session?
No.
With that,
Madam Chair, could we go into closed session at 10:15?
Yes, we will be going into closed session at 10:15.
Thank you.
Okay. So, did you guys hear me? We're going into closed session at 10:15. With that, we've concluded our morning. We will return at 2 p.m.
I don't think I'll use them. I don't know.